Welcome. Thank you for watching this teaching video from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. Please check out our other videos and don't forget to like and subscribe. Our mission is to help people come to know Jesus better and love Him more every day. We believe this will not only help our own spiritual growth, but also help us better influence the community and the world for Christ. For more information about Oak Tree, please visit us at oaktreechurch.com. There you'll find past message series, online giving options, and more information about our discipleship process that we call The Path. Now, enjoy this message. We'd love to hear from you in the comments or the website contact form. Thank you.
For this year, we've been covering three main questions, and we're in a study on this year, mostly about discipleship, and we started with, what are we supposed to be? And we talked about that, and we learned that all churches should be following the same, or have the same answer for what do we want to be. And that is, we need to be subservient to Jesus. And we had, I think we had 5 weeks on this, maybe more, and we talked about examples that Jesus gave us about us being subservient to Him. So we learned things like we need to be the branches and Jesus needs to be the vine. We need to be the flock or the sheep and Jesus is the shepherd. We need to be the building and Jesus needs to be the cornerstone. We need to be the body and Jesus is the head. Right? And all these are just various examples of the same thing, where we need to be in line with Jesus. We need to be thinking the way He is thinking, but we need to be separate and subservient to Him too. So in the second part of this series, we answered the what are we supposed to do question. And that came, again, the same way. All churches should be doing the same thing, and that same thing is proclaiming the gospel and making disciples. And here at Oak Tree, we call that our mission statement, and our mission statement is to help people come to know Jesus better and love Him more. And you should be, you know, nodding your head, yeah, we've heard that a bunch of times, right? it's a simple statement, but the words to know are in there. And that means there's something to learn. And in this case, we need to learn the Bible. And we need to do the path on our Bible, right? There's knowledge to be gained. And then once you have that knowledge, you need to decide whether you need to implement that in your life. And that takes self-control, which is another step on the path. There's going to be problems when you're trying to change how you're living life, right? It's never easy to change, so you need perseverance, another step on the path. And then at some point, you're going to overcome whatever that problem is, and you're going to be able to say, I am one step closer to God, right? And that's how you know Him better and love Him more, right? Exactly. So kind of cool thing. And this is a continual process. Somebody that has been a Christian for 5 minutes is going to love God and Jesus a completely different way than somebody that's been a Christian for 5 years, right? And then think of somebody who's been a Christian for 50 years or 75 years. How much more deeply that they could have a relationship with Christ. But it is a continual effort. We always need to learn more. We always need to keep working in this process. So we also discussed our purpose statement. And our purpose statement is where we're at now and what we're talking about now. And this is what we are supposed to, or what we are supposed to be and what we are supposed to do is should be the same for all churches. But how we do it, that's different. And there's probably an infinite number of ways of how we are supposed to do things. And those are called our purposes. And here at Oak Tree, we use 5 words to describe our purpose. So the first is making God our focus. Sorry, I'm going to move some stuff around here. The first is worship. And worship is we always have our eyes on Jesus. And to me, when that bad thing happens in our life or that unexpected thing happens in our life where it catches us off guard, it's what's the first thing we think of? And if God is that first thing that we think of, you know, whether I need to pray or, oh, God, help me in this situation, I think you're on the right track for where you're going. And if it's not God in that case, maybe you have some work to do to make God be the first thing that you think of. Fellowship is second. That's engaging with fellow Christians. Now, last week we had a stick around Sunday that was mostly for fellowship. We also had a work day, and certainly the work day we were trying to get work done. But we had donuts, we had coffee, we talked to each other. There was definitely some fellowship there. Discipleship is the third one. Discipleship is becoming more like Jesus, and that's exactly what we talked about with the path and the knowledge and the self-control and the perseverance and godliness. And Bible studies also give you insight into discipleship, because you gain that understanding that what I'm doing in life isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. And then you have the choice of, what do you do with that knowledge? And then the last two, ministry. Ministry is serving other Christians. Sounds like an easy one. We certainly have a ton of needs around here. We have a number of groups that are already established, and it's amazing how many people it actually takes to put on this message. We have Treehouse Kids. We have guest services. We have people in the back. We have the band that comes up here. I'm sure I forgot some people. We have people that clean the church and others. Just to put on this Sunday service. And we continually need people. Some people need breaks. You know, it needs to be more than one person in these positions. And we certainly have opportunities for people to help around here and serving other Christians. Now, evangelism is the last one. And if ministry is serving other Christians, evangelism is for everybody else in the world, right? Those who aren't Christians. And our job is to share the gospel to those people. And, if you think back to the Great Commission at the end of Matthew, where, you know, go forth to all nations. Yeah, but certainly we have to go forth to all nations. But South Bend, Indiana is also in need of people sharing the gospel here. And God in the New Testament tells us that we need to always be ready to tell others who ask us what our hope is. And our hope is, you know, and that's a lead-in for us to share the gospel with somebody. So it's not going out, I mean, it certainly can be going out and knocking on doors, but if somebody asks us what our hopes are, that means we're already having a conversation with somebody. So this is our friends, our coworkers, or maybe people that we have first met. So yeah, going out in the nations is important, but it's also important to share it here locally too. All right, last week, Daniel talked about elder requirements. And he gave an overview of what elders are supposed to be doing. And his key points were, because of what elders are supposed to be and what our elders are supposed to do, God gave us a list of character traits and qualification that all elders must meet. And then he also put in a line about all of us here, saying, yeah, these are elder qualifications, but they're also for all Christians too. So all of you guys need to be following these, right? And that's a little scary, and there may be some that you don't meet yet, but as you work down your path, you should be working on these. And then Daniel also said at the end, a quality work requires a quality worker. And I think that's so cool, and all of us are going to be in front of God one day, and, you know, just to hear him even saying, you know, you did some quality work, how cool would that be? All right, so what are we going to talk about this week? So this week, we are going to get into what the elder job is. So we're going to take a look in the Old Testament about what it talks about elders, and we're not going to be there very long. Then we're going to take a look at what elders looks like in the New Testament, and then we're going to talk specifically about what does eldership look like here at Oak Tree Community Church. I do want to start with one thing. I want to start with artificial intelligence. So AI or artificial intelligence is huge in the news. I'm in the IT industry. It's the only buzzword you hear now. It's the only thing anybody cares about. It's like, Like any buzzword, it gets sickening and it gets overused, but it also is going to change all of our lives. I do have a question: is that going to be good or is that going to be bad? And that's to be seen. But how that goes into this message is, I want to let everybody know, I did study for this message. I didn't jump right to AI to begin with. But Daniel and I are currently in a study on eldership with Matt and Philip, and he announced that last week. And we are using a study book and also a book. And the idea is we meet once a month. Out of this book, we're expected to read 3 chapters, and then there's about 20 questions for each chapter, so we have 60 questions to answer, and these questions are not yes-no. Some of them are, okay, I gotta go find in the book what he said, and, you know, write down what he said as the answer, and some of them are, we gotta figure out what he meant, and write out an essay question, and the problem is, 20 years ago, Daniel and I and Ben Noel went through the same study when I was becoming an elder, and we went through the book, but the book's been updated, and he changed every question, so I have to redo it, and it's a great exercise. Ideally, I would do it anyways, but going through this, going through it takes time, and I know some of the material, I lived through it, but certainly understanding it at a deeper knowledge. So to begin with this message, I always create like an overview or bullet points of what I want to do with any message. You know, what's the main points I want to hit, kind of flow out what it's going to look like, and my English teacher, you know, would be so proud of me for doing that, because I never understood doing it then, but it does make sense, and then you kind of fill it in with more and more data. So I had my outline, and I decided to Google AI, what biblical eldership looked like. And it was scary how good the response was, which was kind of amazing. And again, I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. As we start second hour today, I just want to throw out the question to start with, you know, is AI good or evil? And I'm sure we'll go from there. But here's what AI came back with. And I literally took a screenshot of it. These are most of the points I'm going to hit today. I could probably leave the slide up and go through it. But check out the definition of an elder: a mature, respected leader, responsible for the spiritual oversight, teaching, and shepherding of the community. I mean, that's spot on. And then we see in the Old Testament that they call elders tribal leaders. I think they're right there. They're right there with it. So there's a Greek word already in use with Greco-Roman culture, and it was both an official title, you know, elder, and it was also used to describe older men. The church took both the Old Testament usage of elder and kind of warped it into a leader of Christian churches. You know, similar to taking the elders that were in the synagogue during the Old Testament time and Jesus's time. And then we also see later that elders, different words were used in place of elders to stress certain points of what an elder should be. So we see words like overseer and pastor and shepherds. And these are people that govern local churches, which is kind of cool, and this is what you're going to see today. So last week, Daniel talked about job requirements for being an elder, and he read 3 passages, and those passages are up at the top there that we read. And then the guy who wrote the book that we're using, he pulled them out and put them into a document. I just copied that document and put it in here. But the idea is these are the character traits that all of us should have. And a lot of words in here, but also a lot of commonality in here too. So again, 3 main sections in the Bible that describe the qualifications or the character traits that elders should have. And these are the same traits that you as a Christian should have too. The first 2 are from a letter from Paul, and they are to Timothy and Titus. And I think as you remember, the way Paul would work, he considered his job to take the gospel to the Gentiles. And he took that very seriously. And so what he would do is he would go on mission trips. And when he went to different areas, he would be in. He would go to the largest area wherever he was, and he would start to teach, and he would start to share the gospel. And if they were receptive to that, certainly people were considered Christians there. And as he taught more and more people would come up, and finally there would be big enough that they would start a church. And Paul would stay there with the church, and he would be teaching. But that's where Paul wanted to stop, because Paul didn't want to lead that church. He wanted to go to other places and start new churches. And he knew if he left that there would be a void. So he needed somebody to replace him while he went on to the next place. So he had some young men that he was teaching and that knew what Christianity was about and were able to teach them. One of them was named Timothy, which you see there in the first column, and another was named Titus. And they took over for Paul in some cases. And there were probably other people that took over other churches too when Paul moved on to the next church. Paul would still keep in touch with the churches, and he would still keep in touch with the people too, or with Timothy and Titus also. And we have a couple letters that Paul wrote to Timothy, one letter that Paul wrote to Titus. And in these letters that we have up here, Paul was giving the character traits that Timothy and Titus need to apply on the local people in the church, because it was Timothy and Titus's job to pick the elders, or to help pick those elders there. So they needed a list of character traits. So we have that information. And then we also have Peter. So Peter did a similar thing. So Peter, and we'll take a look at Peter's verse in more detail, but Peter considered himself an elder, and he gave a list of elder qualifications, and he gave them to the churches temporarily residing abroad. So if you think back in Peter's time, Christian churches were popping up all over Jerusalem. And the Jewish nation was not very happy with that. And they were condemning the churches. They were kicking them out of the synagogue. There was persecution happening, bad enough that these people had to leave and go to a foreign land. So imagine just picking up and having to move to a different nation, and all the trouble that goes with. You got to find a new job. You got to find a new house. Oh, by the way, you're now a Christian. You need to find a new church. And there isn't one, right? So you're starting new churches. And because you're starting new churches, you need to have church leadership, which means you need to pick elders. So James was giving them some leadership criteria to go by. And Daniel talked about all these last week. He had them up on the screen. You read the verses. And again, these are the character traits that come out. And Philip, Daniel, and I, we have been meeting, we have been discussing this and looking at these words and literally spending hours on maybe not a single word, but on these words as a whole. So take under Titus, three quarters of the way down is the word holy. Is any human holy? What does it mean with regard to an elder that we have to be holy? You know, how holy do we have to be to be holy? So those kinds of things that we talk about. Also up there is the husband of one wife. So questions like, if I'm not married, can I be an elder? Because I don't have a wife. Or another one, what if I am married, I'm an elder, and my wife dies and I remarry? Now I got two wives. Can I be an elder? Those types of questions are what we talk about. And then the last one, and all of these have a million questions around them, but children are believers, and also faithful is like right underneath there. So, or I have faithful children. So that's a characteristic. It makes sense, right? If I am an elder, I need to manage my household well. And if I don't manage my household well, how can I be expected to manage the church well? And if we need to look at my children. That means, first of all, I need to have all the children I'm going to have. Then we need to wait for those children to give their life to Christ, and then I can be an elder, right? And so that's, you know, 20 years down the road. So is that what it means, that all my children have to be believers or children are believers? So it's wrestling through all these questions that we go through. Okay, I'm going to move on, and we're going to talk about what the Old Testament says about elders. So in the Old Testament, if you just Google, you know, in the Old Testament, you know, verses that have elders in them, you're going to get about 180 references. We are not going to go through all 180. I think I'm going to go through two. But the idea is there are trends that happen in there. This one is very simple. You know, we're not talking about a doctrine. It's a word we're looking for in a statement. But there is a lot going on here, even in this verse in Numbers chapter 11, verse 30. Simply it says, "Then Moses returned to the camp along with the elders of Israel." So AI, remember, says that elders were tribal leaders. So it is a good way to think about them. And we see in the Old Testament that elders witnessed a number of significant events. In 2 Chronicles, the elders were notified so they could witness the Ark of the Covenant being moved from one place to the other. You know, it was such a historic event that it was in there. And in fact, I think it was a historic event. I think pretty much every time the Ark moves, it's in the Bible, you know, moving from place to place, and it doesn't move a lot. But we see time after time that the elders were involved with decision-making or informed of actions that had actually happened. We also see in Numbers chapter 11 how many elders there were. At the time of Moses, there were about 2.5 million Israelites as they were wandering around the desert, and there were 70 elders at that time. So our ratio from elders to people is quite a bit higher than that. We also see that elders and priests are two separate groups. In Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 9, it says, "Then Moses wrote down this law and gave it to the Levitical priests who carry the Ark of the Lord's covenant and to all Israel's elders." So we see in this verse that the priests were from the family of the Levites, and they had specific jobs, and those jobs were defined in the Old Testament, and they were defined in Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, and it really revolved from them being an intermediary between the people and God. So they were the one to carry God's ark. They were the one to perform the sacrifices. They were the one, in this case, to take what Moses wrote down. This is the law, right? This is the Mosaic law, Moses' law that he wrote down. They put it next to the ark in this case. The Ten Commandments actually went in the ark, but the Levitical priests would be the ones to actually put it there. Elders, on the other hand, were more of the tribal leaders, and I like to think of them more of local government. And this is my point of view, or my thinking, is that a number of the elders would have also been the number of the judges under Moses when he started putting the law in, and then needed judges too. And when we move from the Old Testament to the New Testament, we see a couple big shifts. First, priests are left out of the New Testament Christian churches, and the only way a priest can get in there is if a priest accepts Jesus Christ in their lives, and then more than likely they would be kicked out of Israel and the church, but they would be a Christian. And then second, when priests are mentioned in the New Testament, they're in reference always to the leadership body of the Jewish faith. And we also see a shift in the meaning of the word elder, where they're still in the leadership position in the synagogue. Elders are also become the leadership position in Christian churches. And we're going to start moving into the New Testament. And first, we're going to take a look at Luke, where Luke still shows that, you know, in reference to elders, that in this case, it's a position of the elders that are in the Jewish leadership. So in Luke chapter 20, verse 1, now one day, as Jesus was teaching the people in the temple courts and proclaiming the gospel, the chief priests and the experts in the law with the elders came up. So Jesus is teaching, and we see three distinct groups of people that come up to him. First are the chief priests. These are the religious leaders. Second are the experts in the law. These are also known as the scribes, but they would be the Jewish scholars and the teachers responsible for interpreting the law and applying the Mosaic law along with oral traditions. And then the third group of people are the elders. Again, the leaders of the community, maybe the local government of the community. And notice again that the priests and the elders are separate groups. Then also in the New Testament, in Acts chapter 6, we see the church selecting people to perform a specific task. Many people think that this was the start of elders and maybe even deacons in here. Now, I'm not going to read this. I've actually gone through these verses with you in a previous message a couple months ago. I'm sure you all remember it, but just as a refresher, the early church had a problem, and it was a significant problem. They had a problem with elders. There was a group, or widows, sorry. they had a problem with widows. There was a group of widows that were getting food, and then there was a second group of widows that weren't getting any food. So there was a disparagence between that. So what the church did is they asked them to select seven able men to take this task on. And their goal was to provide the same amount of care to both set of widows. And although they're not called elders and they're not called deacons at this point, we're going to see the word elder showing up after this reference in here with regards to, hey, this is the church. All right, so the next verse, or the next guy, this thing is ugly. I don't expect you to read it. Sorry, that was entirely my fault. So this is the book of Acts. Just doing a search for the word elder. These are all the elders that come up in the book of Acts, and there's 21 verses with reference to elder in them. You also see I have a couple spaces near the top there. So the book of Acts is a transition book, right? We have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and they tell us the life and times of Jesus. They tell them what they taught, and a lot of the things that we read in these Gospels are similar in the other Gospels. Sometimes the author of the Gospel wants to make a different point or go in a different direction, so they do have some things that may or may not be in the other Gospels. But in the end, it's about Jesus living, it's about Jesus teaching, it's about Jesus saying he's going to die and then going to the cross for us, dying and being resurrected in each one of these gospels. Then we get to the book of Acts, and it kind of funnels down these four books into now what happens. And the book of Acts is about what the early church did. So at this point, in Acts chapter 1, Jesus is literally ascending into heaven, and you have all the apostles just looking up, watching Jesus, and I just looked right in the lights, Jesus going into heaven, and at some point, he either passes through a cloud, or a cloud comes where he's at, and you can't see Jesus anymore. And everybody is still looking up, and all of a sudden, two men start talking to the apostles. And you gotta believe they're like, oh. Because the men are just standing there. Now, the belief is that these are angels instead of men, and because they are identified as two men in white clothing. But the angels say, "Men of Galilee, why do you stand here looking up into the sky? This same Jesus who has been taken up from you into heaven will come back in the same way you saw him go into heaven." So certainly I hear him saying, you know, some cool things here. One, how is Jesus going to return to us? He's going to be floating down, you know, through the clouds coming back down on earth. And I also hear him saying, hey, apostles, Jesus is gone. it's time for you to start the work that Jesus prepared you for. And this is exactly what we see in the book of Acts. So now when we, you know, and that's chapter one, now when we come back to chapter six, we see the apostles already at work. They're out doing their job, which is proclaiming the gospels. They're realizing that they can't do everything around the church, so they need help. So they assign these men, these seven men. It's kind of cool. Let's see. There was something I wanted to bring up. Oh, I'm going back to it because I liked it. Sorry. It doesn't mean a lot, really, but I still think it's kind of cool. So we have the apostles, right? How many apostles we got? Right, 12. So look at verse 2. So the 12 called, right? He doesn't refer to him as the apostle. He just refers to him by a number. So the 12 called these people in and did something. So I don't know if the apostles, if they were called the apostles all the time, but at least this place, you know, Luke calls them the 12, which I thought was pretty cool. And then they say, go together and find seven men that you want to help out in here. And that's in verse 3. You know, carefully select from among you brothers seven men who are well attested, and it gives some traits. And then later on in the Bible, there's a reference to the seven, which is kind of cool too. Anyways, sorry. One of the things I found when I was going, It was exciting to me. All right, so we're now. Chapter 1 tells them that they need to get to work, so they start working. In chapter 6, you already see that they have a church. Chapter 2 is when the church actually began, and 3,000 people actually gave their life to Christ. They were in town for a festival. More than likely, the majority of those people didn't live in Jerusalem, but again, were in town. So they would have taken that knowledge back to their town about Jesus. And the church really got a kickstart at that time. But now they have a church that they're trying to work on and do, get more understanding of. So what we see and what we're focusing on is elders and what the elders are doing. So what we see is references to elders before chapter 6 and through 6:12. Those are all references to elders under Jewish leadership. And then starting after that, the majority of them, not all of them, but the majority of them are now references to elders as workers and part of the leadership of Christians. There are some down at the bottom where the Jewish leadership is very mad at Paul, and the elders are mad at Paul too. but it's kind of cool. And in some cases, you're not going to see the English word for elder in here. I did highlight one verse in there. Notice that elder isn't in there, right? But we see words like, words like where he's talking the flock, and we're talking about overseers, and we're talking about shepherds, which are very, can be equated to elders too. So doing a search, you know, a fuzzy search, this came back, but it was kind of cool because the word elder isn't in there, but they're talking about elders. All right, we also see Peter using the word elder when he's talking to new Christian churches and talking about the description that elders should have. So in 1 Peter 5, verses 1 through 4, this is Peter talking here. So as your fellow elder, so Peter is calling himself an elder. He's also an apostle. He's also one of the 12. I'd go by the 12. and a witness of Christ's suffering. Peter was certainly there to witness Christ's suffering. And as one who shares in the glory that will be revealed, I urge the elders among you, So these elders among you were the elders of the churches that would be reading his letter. And these are, again, former Jews that accepted Christianity, got kicked out of Jerusalem and Egypt, and are now abroad. So what's he telling these elders to do? He's saying, give a shepherd's care to God's flock among you. Exercise oversight, but not merely as a duty, but willingly under God's direction, not for shameful profit, but eagerly. And do not lord it over those entrusted to you, but be examples to the flock. Then when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that never fades away. So here we see Peter calling himself an elder, and he's talking to other elders too. But to do what? And in verse 2, Peter says, give a shepherd's care, exercise oversight. These are exactly things that elders need to do. So we see these same words enhancing our meaning of elder. And it's also a great section because it gives us practical advice on what the elder's job should be. Elders need to care for the flock or the congregation. Elders have to provide oversight, but not too much. And how do we do that? Elders need to do this job not to get rich, but because it's part of a job and it needs to be done willingly and eagerly. Elders need to be examples to the flock. And when the elders meet the chief shepherd, there's going to be rewards. So we see other usages in the New Testament that are very similar to these. I'm not going to read these couple, but I'll allow you guys can read them. In 1 Titus 5, we see Paul telling Titus to appoint elders in every town as Paul directed. And in Acts 14:23, we see Paul and Barnabas going around, and they are appointing elders to all the local churches too. And then in Acts chapter 20, verse 17, we see Paul calling for the elders of Ephesus to come to him. If you've never read this section before, or maybe you haven't read it in a long time, Paul's been arrested again at this time. And this time he knows he's going to die. So he's going to travel back to Rome, he's going to lose, and he's going to lose his life. So he wants to talk to the elders of Ephesus one last time. So they call to him. Kind of a heart-touching thing where there's a lot of love there. Everybody understands what's going to happen, and they send off Paul. And then last verse up there, the 1 Timothy 5:17, we see that elders should be paid and that some elders are worth double honor or double salary, which is a little hard to do today. So a lot that we learn from the Old Testament and New Testament. So what does eldership look like at Oak Tree Community Church? We've seen what elders have been originally commissioned for, but that was 2,000 years ago. You know, how does it work today? What should be happening today? Well, currently Daniel and I are your elders of this church, and we are the church leadership. We're ultimately responsible for everything that goes on in the church, good or bad. We need to be shepherds. We need to be looking out for your spiritual growth. You know, and in our Oak Tree words, you know, how far down the path you're getting. So if you're stuck on something, you know, we need help. You need to know what your next step is. And obviously, you need to know what the Bible has to say, too. We need to provide oversight, not for fame, not for money, but because it's the right thing to do. And sometimes that is very difficult. How much oversight is too much and how much oversight is not enough? But it's to get you down your path. And then there's two hard things we need to do, too. We need to be nice, and we need to be examples. Now, it's not hard being nice, and it's not hard being an example, but it's impossible to always be nice, and it's impossible to always be an example because we're human beings. So it takes some grace on your side too. So Daniel and I are equal in our leadership. He gets one vote, I get one vote. It's really hard to stuff the ballot box with two people. But let's get real here. I have a full-time job. I'm a director over several software development groups. I'm not as well-versed in the Bible as Daniel is. And I would think most of you would say the same thing, right? That you're not as well-versed as Daniel is with the Bible. And we see in verse 1 Timothy 5:17 that's on the screen, it says that elders that can teach and provide leadership are worth double salary. And this means not all elders have that ability. And we should reward those few that can do both. And there's a concept that comes out of this called first among equals. So Daniel and I are elders and equal, but I would be really dense not to defer to him on what the Bible says, right? And, you know, I don't really know what witchcraft happens in Uganda, but he does. So leaning on him for those is just makes sense to do. But I also have to continue my biblical studies. I have to continue to learn, you know, can't lean on Daniel forever. And you should notice the same thing around here too. Let's use second hour as an example. We decided a number of months ago that whoever gives the message is also responsible for leading second hour. Now, sometimes there's no leading in second hour, which is fine, and it's it needs to, it goes where it needs to go. But the first person who should answer from the church's point of view should be the person that is delivering the message, and that mostly happens. And you may also notice that sometimes Daniel was here and he didn't give the message that day, and he actually loves doing that. You know, just being a person instead of the pastor. Up there. So in those cases, Daniel tries to take a back seat, right? Because everybody asks a question and, you know, looks at him. And instead, he wants to give the person that led that day the ability to give the first answer. So you can see him, you know, biting his lips every now and then. He wants to jump in, but he's also knowing that he can't jump in. All right, so elders here at Oak Tree were different than most churches. First, at Oak Tree, we are a separate church. It's just up. We don't report into any hierarchy, so we have to be self-sufficient. We're also different in that we use the word elder in our church leadership because it's biblical, but most churches don't. And it's difficult because when we say elders and somebody is new to our church or somebody or we're, you know, outside of our church, they have no idea what we're talking about. You know, what's an elder? What does that mean? And by the way, elder and pastor is synonymous. So sometimes I refer to Daniel as Pastor Daniel, sometimes as Elder Daniel. There's no real issue with the two. But some churches have elders, but they also have a pastor. And in those cases, it's the pastor and a board of elders, generally as the way I've seen it. And that is not an elder-led church because the pastor is still leading the church at that time. And right, so the board of elders, they can want to go in this direction, but the pastor, because he wins, no, we're going in this position. And it can be a problem. Ben Noel was a former elder here at this church, and he spoke on this from experience. He always said, the pastor can play the pastor card, and that's like a trump card, right? Boom, puts it down on the table, and he wins the trick. So in other words, there can be a discussion, and the board of elders want to go this way, and then the pastor stands up and says, as the pastor, boom, we're going to do this, right? That's not an elder-led church. That is a single pastor-led church. So are there arguments? Can there be contention? Yeah, there should be, you know, but there should be discussion, and there should be some tension sometimes between the elders, and that tension is not a bad thing. We have to, we've recently been meeting with Matt and Philip twice a month. Once is to do the eldership lesson. And the other time we meet, we talk about where we're going with direction to the messages. So we're scoping out, you know, for months at a time where we're going to go. And that takes some discussion. And it takes some, argument's not the right word, but, you know, some people are passionate about where they think to go. And that's absolutely fine, and that's great. But it takes all of us in there to have the conversation, all of us being equal. So taking a step back isn't really the right thing to do. But it's jump in and get involved. And sometimes the direction that was first stated is the direction we go. Most of the time, we go in a different direction and maybe loop around and finally get to where we need to go. Because sometimes we can't jump in. You don't want to just jump in the book of Revelation. You want to do a study on Daniel first to figure out what's going on first, because it's going to lead into the book of Revelation. So a lot of that happens. And it certainly happened in the past couple years when we were talking about teaching about the path. And then this year talking about the three big questions too. And more on discipleship and what we're doing. All right, so why do we only have two elders here at Oak Tree? The Bible doesn't state how many elders we should have, but in all cases, I think, elders is plural, so there are more than one. As Daniel has said, we do have two men that are currently going through eldership training, and that's Matt and Philip. They are 10 months into training, so quite a long time. And I'm putting up a process that we have to become an elder here at Oak Tree. Again, this would just be our process for it. So calling them candidates, because really it can be anybody. Anybody can strive to be a candidate. And the first thing that they need to do is they need to review the eligibility list. And they need to decide for themselves, do I fit all these categories? Now, that certainly there's always going to be questions on both sides. Really? but they need to make that decision first. Am I eligible to be an elder? And then the candidate also needs to decide, do I want to be an elder? Because you can have all the qualifications, but maybe you decide, why would I want to do that? Then the third step, the current elders, you know, is this person a good fit for this church? So there certainly can be discussions there. And is it a good time to bring on more elders? There's a year-long training session. Certainly that isn't biblical in there anywhere. But this learning session does a number of things. One is... In this case, with two candidates that we have, all four of us are hearing the same thing on what an elder's job is and what an elder should do. And all four of us, I mean, we're meeting for about 2.5 hours. And, you know, once a month, you get to know each other better. You can fake things a couple times, but not for 10 times at 2.5 hours. So you get to know people. Right, and where they're at, and I think that's a great thing too. So we're not going into this lightly. The candidates know exactly what they're getting into, and we believe we know exactly what we're getting from a candidate too. After the training sessions, elders talk. Do we want to move forward with these candidates? And then this is where the congregation gets involved. So if a candidate will be moving forward. Or wants to move forward, at some point we're going to come to you and say, this candidate would like to be an elder. We want to give you guys some time to talk to them, to ask them questions, and provide the current elders feedback. That feedback can be in the form of email, just come talk to us. You can schedule a meeting if you have something. We're not going to listen to rumors, so we need to know things that you know firsthand, good or bad, about the candidate. When I went through this, there was a probation period before I was installed. Since we're meeting with these guys to talk about ministry and where we're going, week to week. That may be a shortened probation period, and then elders vote on whether or not the candidate should be an elder. If it does happen, I assume it'll be on some Sunday morning, we will bring the candidate up, say a prayer, and confirm that they are now an elder in front of the church, so everybody understands that candidate is now an elder. So that's the process there. We can talk more about that at second hour too, if anybody wants. So as we end for today, talk about the keys. Old Testament defined what elders were, and it was more like local government, tribal leaders. New Testament kept that for the nation of Israel, and it also added elder to the word for the Christian leadership in there. Elders became the only church leadership. Oak Tree Community Church does its best to follow the New Testament that we use elders. And last thing as a key point for today, you should know that we have two men going through the eldership leadership process, and at some point you may have a chance to share your thoughts on them.